I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
I feel like roller coaster people, I'm going to make an assumption here, are like trivia people. Is that true? Because I feel like roller coaster people love the knowledge that they have on the roller coaster. So they would like trivia style games.
Like, like what else do we have? Like we can ride them and we can know things about them, right?
Yeah,
like
that's the hobby.
That's the whole hobby. Yeah.
But it's just like knowing little facts about the roller coasters. That's like the hobby.
Yeah. And like knowing what a block section is and shit like that.
What's too. A block section?
Yeah. A block zone is the most underrated safety aspect of a roller coaster.
Speaking of underrated, welcome to Play to Win. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about the most underrated cards in all of CEDH, Competitive Commander. This is a term that is a little bit confusing to me. I'm not going to lie. Underrated. Because for me, the cards are rated for how good they are. So it's a little bit difficult to understand what underrated means, because then you have to have like a feeling of how every single person in the community feels about certain cards. It's a little bit tricky for me to understand.
That's fair. Yeah, where I come from with it is that there's a general understanding from the community on how good a card is. Like, we all can agree that Force of Will is super good, but maybe someone thinks that it's bad.
Yeah.
And so they could say that it's overrated. Someone might say, you know, I think Force of Will is so good that even people who think that it's good aren't talking about even how much better that it is. So I even think it's an underrated card. So it's all just like a personal gauge on how you yourself.
It's very personal is what I'm understanding.
A personal gauge on how you feel about a card versus what you conceive the general consensus of the community to feel about the card.
Okay, so it's okay that these are very personal for me and that I think these are good cards. And for some reason, I just don't see them in as many lists as maybe I think I should.
I think that's a good way to understand that you might feel something is underrated, because you might look at a list and go, you're not playing this card. I can't believe you're not playing this card. This is a staple for me in all of my blue decks. Why aren't you playing this card? I think that's a good indicator of maybe you overrate something that someone else might be underrating.
Okay, and this is different from a pet card, because this isn't a card that we love despite it not being good. This is a card that we think is good and we think other people don't see its quite potential. So a little bit different from a pet card, but kind of in the same ballpark of almost 99s.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there's people that are watching and going, no, I think that card is as good as you guys say that they are. So you might not overrate or underrate these cards, dear viewer. We think that in general, they might be underrated.
This was also a topic that was submitted by a patron, yes?
Larceny Roars asked us to talk about some underrated cards.
Thank you, Larceny.
And really what they are, so thank you very much. We each picked 5 cards to talk about, because I feel like this has been our list format recently.
Yeah, 5. Yeah, 5 each makes 10, sometimes 6-4.
And that's still 10.
6-7.
Six, that's not
that was
10.
For
that's
comments.
That was for, yeah.
That was free comments.
we found it. We did the hack.
All right, yeah, what's the first card on our list?
All right, so Mockingbird is the first card on our list. Yeah, this is one of your submissions here. This is X and a blue for a bird bard. That's a 1-1 flyer. It says that you can have Mockingbird enter as a copy of any creature on the battlefield with mana value less than or equal to the amount of mana spent to cast Mockingbird, except it's a bird in addition to its other types, and it has flying.
Yeah, I feel like Mockingbird is strangely a card that just plays better than it reads a lot of the time. The X makes it a little bit confusing. If you play X is 1, you can copy a 2-drop. That's kind of obvious for most people who play with the card, but I don't know, I kind of missed that the first time looking at this card. And the fact that you're giving the thing flying is also like weirdly huge and relevant. Timna is huge. A lot of Timna decks are able to play Mockingbird as a way to kind of clone the best thing on the field, because the best thing on the field normally costs like 2 or 3 mana, and this kind of always just costs however much the thing is that you're copying, right? But it also just has flying. It's just like a better version of everything that you copy. A lot of people play this card, and I think for a good reason, but I always think that more people should play it. And whenever I see it, it's just like better than I even imagined.
I had a game a little bit ago that I cast Ranger Captain of Eos to go find this, and I cloned my Ranger Captain of Eos to go find an Esper Sentinel, yeah. And that felt absolutely cracked to be able to do all of that.
Right, because now you have two Ranger Captains, which you might think like, okay, so what? But like that means now when you crack your Ranger Captain and someone goes, okay, I'm going to silence you in response, you go, okay, I'm going to crack my other Ranger Captain in response to your silence, and now Born Upon the Wind, when that one resolves and went over top, or it just gives you like more options, right?
Yeah, which is case scenario, now if you can't win, you can pass the turn with like your Wishclaw Talisman in play and stop two people if you need to and go, well, now no one has anything else for me and I'm going to just be able to still win on my turn.
You're much more willing to use your Ranger Captain defensively to stop somebody else when you have two of them because you know you have another one that can protect your win on your next turn, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we could talk forever about why Ranger Captain is good, but it's really, it's really like cards like Mockingbird that help make it so good.
Yeah.
And even though a lot of what makes clones good is that you're getting a mana discount for the busted creature that you're going to get because you're using it on like a Consecrated Sphinx or an Atali or something like that, right? But like Mockingbird is always a great value creature. In worst case scenario, it's a Birds of Paradise that, you know, maybe your Valley Floodcaller will untap at some point.
For just one mana, it copies the Birds of Paradise, right? It's the cheapest you can get a clone if you do it for just the one mana mode.
Exactly, yeah. But like it can also be Lothos. So like it's always been like an Esper Sentinel, this value creature that is always going to get you advantage. So you can keep hands that maybe you wouldn't keep with the Phantasmal Image. Like Phantasmal Image doesn't stick around the same way that this does then.
Yeah, and even if it's something as simple as like copying your own Esper Sentinel, playing Esper Sentinel, playing Mockingbird to copy the Esper Sentinel, now you have two. Every time someone casts a spell, you draw two cards. The difference between drawing one card and two cards every time something triggers is like actually huge. It's why Delny is so powerful. Like that can be very, very good.
Especially on something like Esper Sentinel that does kind of have a low cost and then is shut off for the rest of the turn.
Right.
So like I kind of like being able to double up on that one specifically, especially if like your deck doesn't have ways to pump Esper Sentinel, which let's be honest, who does?
Not very many people
do,
right?
So like being able to have more Esper Sentinels, I think is a better way to go about that then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, I mean, we talked about the power with Ranger Captain. I think that's kind of actually the strongest thing that Mockingbird offers is now the Ranger Captain package gets a little bit bigger. Whereas before you were basically just getting Esper Sentinel. Sometimes you could get Walking Ballista or Ragavan or whatever.
Depending on your deck.
It was mainly Esper Sentinel, but now Mockingbird, I feel like, is like a strong pick for the second option most of the time because of just the flexibility and it does a lot of cool things. So I think it's a little bit underrated. It does see a lot of play, like I said before, but I think it should see even more play.
If you're on Ranger Captain, you definitely need to be on it. And it's now, I think, like I'd rather have in my blue deck as like my first clone. Well, hold up. Maybe you need to be on Ranger Captain for it to be your first clone because it's Phyrexian Metamorph.
Phyrexian Metamorph and Phantasmal Image are the other reasonable options that I think those two cards can likely go in like just about every deck.
But they do different things.
They do different things.
I would argue that they do different things.
But close to, they say a similar thing. They clone a thing, right?
Yeah.
But they do different things for sure. I think Mockingbird is close to just as good as both of those cards. I think depending on your deck and what you want, you would want 1, 2, 3 of those three clones. Those are the top ones, I think.
I probably rank it Phyrexian Metamorph, Mockingbird, and then Phantasmal Image. But if I'm playing Ranger Captain, then it's Mockingbird, Phyrexian Metamorph, and then Phantasmal Image.
Yeah, and Flesh Duplicate is also quite good. Clever Impersonator is also quite good.
I'm just not at a point where I need four clones anymore.
Right, yeah, we could talk about, that's a whole other episode talking about clones, but Mockingbird's one of the best of them for sure. Second or first or third, depending on your deck.
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on to the next card.
I've got a card now that's also one mana to talk about. This is Nature's Claim.
Nature's Claim.
This is just a green mana to destroy an artifact or enchantment, and you gain 4 life.
I feel like this one has fallen out of favor recently.
I'm bringing up a card from 2019 CEDH.
A while ago, this was like really like quite a staple, but I feel like now it's just been cut for, I don't know, more.
Paseju,
I guess.
Paseju is really
one.
What happened to Paseju's it. And it's been happened. A long time that Paseju's been around by now. It's been like 4 years that Paseju's been around. So there's really been no need for Nature's Claim, but sometimes Paseju needs to be your land because you don't have a legendary creature in play because it's 7 mana and stuck in your command zone.
Right.
Like having another way to get rid of a Rhystic Study is super important. And what's turned me around on this card is that a lot of times in Atali specifically, Nature's Claim is a silence because all I need to do is just get rid of the one Rhystic Study in play. And then once I Atali, there's no way you're going to draw into Mindbreak Trap if you don't have your thing anymore. So if you don't have your free interaction already, now I've basically prevented you from getting your free interaction and I can just go to win the game instead.
Yeah, it's kind of fair. It acts as like a peek almost. It acts as like a Gitaxian Probe or something. It almost looks in your opponent's hand because by the time that you cast your spell, like you said, like if they don't have anything, anything, okay, then you don't have anything. So I'm going to feel free to sack all my lands and pay all my life and do everything I can to go for the win, because by now you would have done something. There's always, you know, I don't know, something that could be relevant they have, right? But I get what you're saying, is that it clears the path. It gives you the confidence to go for it.
Exactly. So it feels just way better and more safe, especially in a deck that doesn't have the ability to interact on the stack so much.
Yeah.
And like Veil of Summer, I feel like I should be remembering more, says your spells can't be countered. And that sentence doesn't have any colors that are associated with it.
Period.
It just says your spells can't be countered. Autumn's Veil doesn't say that. Autumn's Veil cares about the colors of things that are countering your spells.
Veil of Summer cares about blue and black when it comes to your permanents being targeted by stuff.
That's correct. What it is? Yeah.
But Red Blast still won't counter stuff with Veil of Summer. Wait, now I'm not sure. Are you sure?
Yes. No, I'm positive.
You're
about
positive
that.
About this.
Yeah, because that's what Veil of Summer says. Because we've had that come up before. You can use Red Blast on Thoracle on the stack. I don't care. It's uncounterable.
Okay. All right. I feel like this conversation does sound familiar. I don't know. I can't remember which way it went.
It's in the middle of the card too. Just the middle of the card in the middle of the wall of text says your spells can't be countered.
Yeah. And you think it's by blue or black, but it's not. It's just
because
are we talking about Veil of Summer? Is that an underrated card?
No, I'm talking about how like, because I don't have other Veil of Summers to help protect me from counter spells, and like Veil of Summer, I usually think is like, oh, that's a silence. I can cast it first and then cast my other spells. I don't have to do it in response to a counter spell. Like, fish is the same way.
Yeah.
I need a better thing that helps me fish and helping me. This is a great way that helps me fish. Get rid of a fish with a Nature's Claim.
And find that you have no interaction.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I like that. And the four life doesn't matter. It's nothing. Who cares?
Because I'm playing a Tali.
It doesn't matter at all.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to cast all of your spells.
This card is underrated. I agree. There are a lot of other options, besides you being the big one, Abrupt Decay being another one.
And Natural State now?
Which is a one mana
instant that doesn't gain them life, but it only kills things with mana value 3 or less.
Which is most things, right?
Which is like Vexing Bobble, which is like another thing that I want to have Nature's Claim in the deck for. It is still an instant. Yeah,
better than Nature's Claim then, right?
But like,
doesn't it hit?
In theory, I want to hit a Portal to Phyrexia if I need to. In theory, I want to hit like Clock of Omens. Like if I'm playing against Magda.
Yeah, I guess the life gain is so irrelevant that it doesn't matter. It's the exact same thing.
If I use it to get rid of Necropotence, they no longer have a Necropotence.
I totally agree with what you've just said.
I forgot. And we remember what that was.
Yeah. I remember we did have kind of this conversation off camera a little bit. It does seem like the other one is just kind of better because what the hell do you want to hit? But like realistically, it doesn't matter. The fact that it can hit anything makes it better because the four life is so close to irrelevant and there's no other upside on the other card, right?
There's no other upside.
Right. So it's just a downside. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Nature's Claim is underrated. We should play more.
That's why it's in my Atali list.
I love it.
That's a thing.
What's the next card we're talking about today?
Snap.
Snap. I've been loving Snap a lot in Green Goblin. I think it's great there when you get to reduce Snap in any way. And every time I see it out of the Rog Thrasios decks, I'm like, oh god, we're fucking dead.
Oh, we're so dead.
Especially if they can, like, god forbid, like, snap their own Fairy Mastermind and then they untap the Guy's Cradle and it taps for like 9 and then they play the Fairy Mastermind and then blink and like they don't have infinite mana but they have like 50 or 60 and you're like,
dude,
you do anything to them and they're like, okay, activate Thrasios.
But it's like Spellseeker that they're bouncing with.
That's the worst one.
It's gross shit. It's like, I'm gonna bounce my Cloud of Fairies and make like 50 mana with this interaction between Snap, this, and then Eternal Witness, which also is an infinite combo with Eternal Witness snapping Gaia's Cradle.
Yep.
You can make infinite green mana at least.
And I feel like oftentimes with Snap, when they bounce somebody else's thing, I'm like, okay, thank God. At least they're just making 12 mana and activating Thrasios 4 times and whatever.
Getting three cards.
You know what I mean? And they're like, they're not using it to like progress their own game state, because once they're doing that, they're already so far ahead by the time they're snapping their own thing. But besides just the Rog Thrass deck, which has been picking up a lot of steam, and it seems like it looks really like a really great deck. Just in other decks, I think it's just like Snap is underrated. Like, you read it at 2 mana and you know that it untaps your lands, but it so feels like 0 or plus 1 mana so much of the time.
Yeah.
Because of Ancient Tomb and because of other little City of Traders or whatever, you can so often just like bounce something that you don't even care about just because you kind of need the mana and you want another card in your graveyard for Underworld Breach or whatever. Like, the floor is so high, it feels like, with that card.
It really is, yeah. And when we were playing Ad Nauseam more, I feel like that's why we weren't honing in on it so much, was because because the two pips actually kind of matters if you can just play Chain of Vapor and you don't care if they try to interact with you after that. But right. like, I don't know. Something about Snap actually being free, and now that Necropotence is way better, I feel like I would agree. It's being underplayed right now because every deck is like also trying to win with creatures. We all already know that most of the counter spells in the format are,
well, negates, I call them, but
they're
yeah.
negates. Yeah, they're all instants.
They're all instants. But most counter spells in the format specifically target instants and sorceries or non-creatures spells,
in
right?
particular, right?
The yeah. main ones that we have that counter actual creatures are really just like Force of Will, Pact of Negation,
Mind Break Trap
sometimes.
But even then, that doesn't stop Thoracle Consult.
Right. Well, it could.
Not for free if they just go fast as Oracle Demonic Consultation.
Yeah, they have to pay the 4 mana. But besides that, like Mana Drain sees a little bit of play, but not a ton. And then besides that, that's all there is to worry about for creature counter spells.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like having interaction on the board is where I want to be able to do things to be able to interact with creatures, and Snap being a free way to do that then like lets me hold up more counter magic after that, I think is the perfect thing to have.
Yeah. And it's so nice, like we talked about at the beginning, that it also progresses yourself. You can use it as a ritual. You can reuse your own ETB thing, or you can get rid of something that you need to. It's going to be free a lot of the time. Just tap 2 mana and untaps the 2 mana. And then rather than being the Into the Flood Mine, making now your Thassa's Oracle Demonic Constellation cost 4 mana instead of 3, Snap makes it so your Thassa's Oracle Demonic Constellation still costs 3 mana. It doesn't change the math at all into your win, which is like huge. That's like really
that
relevant.
Is huge.
I love this card a lot. Snap Back is another card we could even talk about in the same idea of like free interaction. I like Snap more personally, but Snap Back can also be quite good. And I've been thinking about that card a lot recently.
If you play a deck that's going to have a full hand every single turn, I think that Snap Back's a good card for you. But what makes it a little bit tougher is that, you know, you are going down on cards when you already want to play Force of Negation and Force of Will in a lot of those decks. I normally have a cap on how many of those like pitch effects I can have. I do agree though. Like that's a card that I'm trying to find more decks that can play Snap Back in because of how much I like Snap.
I think in a lot of the Esper based decks, which includes Blue Farm, all of the Timna-ish decks, all of the decks that rely on drawing 1,000 cards, I think Snap Back is great in. Rogthras, weirdly, I feel like they don't often have a ton of cards in their hand. They've drawn a lot of cards, but it's just like all on the board.
And they just keep deploying them.
Right, everything is in play, and like they have 3 cards in their hand, and the 3 cards are like 3 counter spells. You know what I mean? Like but everything else is like in play, so like they don't draw quite as many cards, so Snap Back might be a little bit tricky for those types of decks.
Well, plus Snap synergizes with like way more things in your deck.
Yeah.
Like there's no infinite loops you can do with Snap Back. There's no way that you can generate mana with it.
Right.
Yeah, it's just the interaction. It's really fucking good interaction, but
the ceiling
is
lower than Snap. Snap's ceiling. We talked about the high floor on Snap, but Snap's ceiling is like insane. It makes 1,200 mana. Gaia's Cradle is nuts now, right? Like
I love a good ceiling. Michelangelo would love this card.
Let's move on to the next one. Have we rated these? We have Snap.
No, I've decided we're going to do that at the end now. At the very end, we're going to give all the cards we talked about.
Make them wait. Yeah, make them wait to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep them thinking.
Best part of the episode comes at the end.
What's the fourth card we're talking about today?
Grim Tutor is the fourth card that we're talking about today because it's 1 and 2 black for Demonic Tutor, but you lose 3 life too. Yeah.
It sounds like so silly because of what it does is so nothing, and it's strictly worse Demonic Tutor in
it
every way.
It sounds painful to play.
But realistically, like, it's the second best Demonic Tutor, which sounds crazy. Like, it's the second best search your library for any card and put it right in your hand. That's the second best.
It literally is.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything else, Vampiric Tutor puts it on top. Imseal puts it on top. Praetor's Grasp searches an opponent's library. For an unconditional search your own library for any singular card, Grim Tutor is the second best.
Doesn't make you have delirium.
Right.
Doesn't make you like exile cards from your graveyard or some shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Which means that with Underworld Breach, it's like insanely good. And we've talked about Underworld Breach 1,000 times and everyone knows, but any tutor makes that Underworld Breach like a one card win if you have enough cards in your graveyard and enough mana, right?
Exactly.
So use Grim Tutor to search for Underworld Breach, cast a breach, flashback the breach. No, what's it called? You escape Grim Tutor with the Underworld Breach to search for Lion's Eye Diamond or Brain Freeze and mill your library and just go from there.
You need a lot more life. You're going to have a decent amount of life by the time you can get this up a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like Blue Farm gets attacked, but Blue Farm goes off with 20 plus life a lot of the time. And that's plenty to be able to set yourself up with just Grim Tutor and Underworld Breach then.
And a lot of the times you really just need like 9 life. If you have enough mana, you have to be in a good spot to just like, if you're using it to just like win the game on the spot, you need like the 3 life for the breach, and then you have 3 life for the lion's eye diamond, and then 3 life for the brain freeze. But oftentimes you might like have one of those pieces already, or you might be already in your graveyard. You've already played a different tutor, a gamble that you can use the gamble now instead. So like there are other ways to like shortcut that, obviously. But I think the fact that it is a 3 mana unconditional tutor is actually just like really good, right?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I put it in Tim the Malcolm because I had Rev in there instead. And yeah. I was like, well, Rev will help get me to a win condition. And I kept playing Rev going like, I'm not finding a win condition.
This is taking too long.
There's like someone else's Draenith Magistrate in play. Right. Like something else is going on here. But like once I swapped out Rev for Grim Tutor, now I can like look at these hands, or like I get into these scenarios like late game where I go, finally, the tutor that I need to just put something else into my hand. Is it better than Wishclaw Talisman? Because I guess I run Wishclaw Talisman more than I run Grim Tutor.
I guess, you know what? Wishclaw might actually be a little bit better, but it's different because Wishclaw you can't just use for value. Grim Tutor you can use for value.
Yeah,
you can
that's true.
I can just find, I need Rustic Study. Fuck it. I'm so like, behind, whatever. Like Wishclaw,
and what makes Wishclaw good is that you can do it at instant speed to find yourself a silence if you need to. Right. At instant speed on your turn, mind you. But you can find yourself a silence or like a piece of interaction at instant speed if you need to. Whereas this, it can find you anything at any point. Right. So I agree. We're comparing a lot of these other cards that maybe part of the reason why they're underrated is because there's something else that does what they do a little bit better. There's an aspect to these cards that make them better than a lot of their other counterparts in other circumstances, whereas like we can use Grim Tutor for value and not just have to win the game.
Right. And Wishclaw, weirdly, it doesn't actually help with an Underworld Breach line because you can find the breach, but then it's not in your graveyard, so you can't use it again to keep on going. You know what I mean? So in many ways, I think Wishclaw is better. Wishclaw's a little bit more abusable. You can do things like
Opposition Agent and then make someone else use the Wishclaw and then you get the tutor from their deck.
Exactly. Yeah. Or find, you go find Culling Ritual and then you give it to them and then you blow it up anyway and you make a whole ton more mana. That's real great.
Like, you play a key that lets you untap it and then use it twice before you give it away.
Yep. You get 2 tutors out of it. So there's more ways to like exploit it in that way, but Grim Tutor works well because it goes to the graveyard. So stuff like Yawgmoth's Will and Underworld Breach can use it again, which is much better. So right away, my gut is like Wishclaw Talisman's better, but realistically, Grim Tutor is like a lot closer to Wishclaw Talisman than we think. I think it's actually,
I think so too.
That's
the
underrated part of it, is I think it's just about as good.
And still working like very perfectly with Dark Ritual too, I think is also kind of nice. That 4 mana Diabolic Intent is still way different. Like I'd way rather have it be a little cheaper and cost me life than have to spend that extra mana. Like it's hysterical what that difference is.
For sure. And even the difference between 3 and 2 mana is a huge difference. Like, that is for sure.
Also, but for sure.
The cards in CDH are so powerful. I still think 3 mana for a tutor, that's a good enough rate in some decks. Praetor's Grasp is good. I mean, Praetor's Grasp is good because it can sort of be a separate win condition if you get rid of all yours. That's another, I guess, comparison in the same world as Wishclaw Talisman and Grim Tutors. Yeah. They are similar. But
we're also, again, like, Ad Nauseam's not played so much. And another reason why Grim Tutor wasn't good was because it was 6 life. Total life.
Yeah.
Now that we don't have to worry about that, like, Necropotence decks can be a little bit more flexible with this now.
And then it works well. We don't have to talk a ton more about this card, but with
it's
stuff
a
like,
tutor, right?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It works well with Crick. It can only cost 1 mana still. It works. I've been thinking about it for Green Goblin because Green Goblin can make it reduce and just be black for a tutor, which is like a demonic tutor then.
I'm just saying, don't forget about it. And don't forget about it because it made my Tim the Malcolm deck way much better.
Yeah. Let's talk about another card.
Yeah. This is Professional Facebreaker, dude.
Dude, this one's so good.
This one's so good. For 2 and a red, it's a 2/3 with mana. And whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you create a treasure token, and then you can sacrifice a treasure token to exile the top card of your library, and you may, I bet it's play it this turn.
I don't think it's land. Is it cast at this turn?
You think it's cast?
I think it's cast.
Dude, you can play it this turn.
Oh, wow, you can play a land from the top?
This is why Pro Facebreaker is underrated.
Yeah, you can play a land from the top. This card, I feel like, is always, especially with the rise of Timnadargo, and it's not just Tyler, because Tyler's playing the deck, but I think a lot of other people are too, and any deck that can reliably make a ton of treasures, Professional Facebreaker works really well with.
Yeah, no, I agree. My next one is Dargo Timna.
Oh, really?
Just like the commander pairing, so we might as well lump this all together,
I
guess.
That Mardu Shell, which has been around for a while, I feel like recently has been like taking off. I've been seeing it do better at tournaments, and the deck seems really good.
Well, yeah, I think what happens is there's always a Mardu deck that's viable in CEDH, and just right now, the best flavor of it is Dargo.
Right, yeah.
It's always a Timna pairing, because Timna is just so cracked. So but good. Right now, like, I feel like a lot of the Dargo tools have just been getting much better in the format as a whole, and we keep getting more cards that are like Professional Facebreaker and make you more treasures, do more things like what Professional Facebreaker can do, so it just adds to all of your capabilities.
And it's specifically the addition of Delny, I think, that has truly, like, recently tied this deck together in an awesome way, because Delny doubles the treasures that you get with Professional Facebreaker. So if you connect with all three players and there's a Delny out and a Pro Facebreaker, you're making 6 treasures off that. That's huge. If Tim is out too, you're also drawing 6 cards off that. That's huge. Like, out of nowhere, a Mardu deck with 6 treasures and 6 cards, you're going to be able to put a win together. Your whole deck is like little buddies and then tutors and win conditions, right? Like, there's such a little amount of interaction in that deck. They play pretty low land counts. It's so precious for them to get cards like that. So because Delny kind of like turns all of the cards up to 11, having access to that, it makes Professional Facebreaker so good, because now you get treasures, but it can go both ways. The fact that it can either be treasures or cards is like so powerful.
Yeah, especially with Delny now, you can make cards and have mana to cast those cards that you get with it too. Like, it just gives you so much more reach.
So much reach. Yeah, it works. Yeah, I know. There's so much synergy with so much of the rest of that deck. All of the other cards, it works well with Ragavan, because now you have 2 things that are making treasures.
Yeah.
It works well with like all the other little Mardu attacking things that work well with
even
Timna.
Even like, what's the pinger? That whenever you sacrifice something, you get to ping something? One and a black and a red for a 3/3. Whenever you sacrifice a
Mayhem
permanent.
Devil.
Yeah, that thing.
Mayhem Devil. Yeah.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, it works great with Professional Facebreaker, because every treasure that you sacrifice to look for a card, now you're also killing a thing.
Yeah, whether you use it for mana or sacrifice the treasure for a card. I feel like normally it's like you get one or the other to have the synergy work out, but it's nice that like no matter what you're doing, Mayhem Devil and Professional Facebreaker are best friends.
Every time I see the card, it's doing a lot more than I think it's going to do. I think, oh, it's okay, you know, you have Professional Facebreaker. Sure, you're going to make some treasures. But like very quickly, that dynamic changes between like they're making a bunch of treasures, they're making a couple of treasures. Okay, that's really good. And then all of a sudden, Facebreaker is the win condition. It's the ad nauseum. Oops, you didn't realize they made 12 treasures. Oops, that means they're going to draw 10 cards because they have all this land that's untapped because it was from turns ago. You know what I mean? So like very quickly, it allows you to find a window when maybe you didn't think there was going to be a window there or something like that.
That last line is insanely underrated,
right.
I will say.
And then like, also it has menace. Also, it's easy to connect itself. Like also it has 3 toughness, so it can block when you need to for some reason. Like it's got a lot of things going for it, and I've been super impressed by this card.
It really does, yeah. Well, I'm hyping it up, but it's not an Itali anymore. It's slow is the problem. It's not fast enough for your turn 2 deck. Yeah, it's great in your Timna decks, but it's not fast enough for your turn 2 decks. It's one of these cards that like the longer it's out, the more value it's going to generate you. So if you're looking to generate a lot of value, this slaps. And my next pick was Timna Dargo, just like the commander pairing as a whole, because it's definitely on the come up, and it's something that maybe I'm underrating as like I would play against it, because I normally underrate a Mardu commander that's coming up against me, because I'm like, all right, I know they'll be fast, but if I can dismantle them at like one critical Achilles heel point, I don't have to worry about them for the rest of the game.
Right, because they don't have counter spells a lot of times. So if you just like destroy the artifact or hit the enchantment or whatever that needs to be hit out of the Mardu deck, most of the time that's going to resolve.
But I haven't found where that point is in Timna Dargo yet, because it's way more resilient than just like Timna Krark, which was just like, okay, well, if you don't have your Krark advantage engines going on, now you can't really do anything well.
Most of the time when I see the deck play out, it does go fast, but like what it's doing in the meantime is putting out a bunch of value creatures. So like while you're fighting them over like getting rid of this win condition and getting rid of that win condition, at the end of that, it's like the Nadu thing. Like they're still left over with like there's an Orcish Bowmaster in play and there's a Mayhem Devil in play and there's all these other little buddies that are in play or something. So like they still like have ways to keep going. Timna is quite powerful in a deck that wants to empty your hand every turn.
Yeah.
Just specifically for the political aspect, because you never have any cards in your hand. But then on your turn, you draw 6 cards and you use them all, and then you pass and you never have any cards in your hand. So when someone asks, I have no cards in my hand. There's nothing here. You see what you see with what you get, but you don't realize that they're going to see a whole bunch of cards on the top of their library next turn. So yeah, all these things work together in that same way.
Yeah. So I feel like this like leaning into the creatures that the deck has been doing a little bit more has been really helping them out, right? Their spells aren't as interactable because they don't have to put so many on the stack. They don't have like one creature that they're relying on.
That's what Tyler was telling me yesterday, that he goes for the lines that are more expensive, but they're 2 creatures, whatever the Dargo and the 2 creatures are, because there's just less counterspells that way. So like that's how the Mardu deck beats all the counterspells. We said the issue is you just get rid of the thing, but if you just like lean into like ways that are like difficult to interact with. I know the one, there's a loop with Deadpool and infinite mana with Technomancer, and you force everyone.
Technomancer is a cracked card.
There's a line in there that I don't know it exactly, but it's really good and it's very difficult to interact with once they get to the point. It's kind of like the Nature's Claim where you get to like soft check for interaction, because if they let you get away with the loop, then it's too late for them to do anything and you know they don't have anything.
Yeah. I've never understood understood how Ruthless Technomancer works. Maybe that should be a card that's on this list.
That one's an underrated card too. That I assume that once it hits the battlefield, I'm probably dead most of the time.
I have to do something about it, but I can't because it's a fucking creature and Dargo's already here.
I had a locals game the other day against Tyler where I won on the stack, weirdly enough, with Technomancer on the stack still.
Oh, thank God.
I'm like, oh, this is the, I'm not going to bother dealing with this.
Now I push.
I'm just going to push now. And then I also specifically want to talk about Sacrifice and Burnt Offering. Those cards in Dargu are really like what makes this card insane, because it allows you to tap out for value, and you go to this singular point where you just have one mana, and then you Burnt Offering and you have eight mana, and all of a sudden you unlock yourself and like
your problems are solved.
This is what happens a lot of times in like Storm decks, is like you can chug, but you run out of mana resources eventually as you're chugging, and then eventually if you whiff and you've run out of resources too early, then you die. But this gives you an option to like reopen the resources real quick and like let you like, okay, keep chugging along, keep on moving, keep on doing stuff, because Dargo costs so much mana and all of a sudden you have seven or eight mana or whatever and it becomes easy to keep going.
And then he doesn't cost any mana anymore when you have like Altar of the Wretched and you have way more wheels, you know, favorable for you because of what your commander does. Like it just puts you in so many better scenarios then.
Yeah. And the Dargo math can be a little tricky. Like that's for sure. It can be hard, but I think oftentimes the what you're looking for with the Dargo deck is just like get Dargo to cost one mana one time. And then for the rest of that turn, every time you sack him and recast him, he's just going to still
cost.
He's just one mana every time then. So normally that looks like sacrifice three things and he costs one mana. And then for the rest of the turn, every time you cast him, he's one mana. That's like my shortcut way of like trying to figure out what's going on with the deck. What makes it difficult is that
if you lose that turn and you
have to go again. And then now Dargo costs four sacrifices and a mana to play or whatever. Then it gets a little bit trickier.
What the hell? How many times did I sacrifice him last time? I looped them infinitely. Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so if they're going fast, that's what I think you have to look out for. And as a Dargo pilot, that's what you're trying to do. Sacrifice three things, which can be three things that are just in play that you sacrifice by casting Dargo, because as an additional cost, you can sacrifice a whole bunch of shit. Dargo is just incredibly broken.
Dumb that you're allowed to
so
do
so insanely
that.
Broken. Yeah. One more thing I've been yammering on about this, but the fact that you can backdoor into just Timnaplan and attack so well with this deck is so strong.
Yeah, he's a trampler, right?
Like the fact that you can just like, I can go fast if I want to, or if it doesn't seem like that's going to work, I can just Timna draw a game. It's so good.
I do my Orcish Bowmaster, my professional Facebreaker, and then I just draw cards and win that way.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I love this deck. I think it's really great. I think we're going to see a lot of good stuff from it coming up.
Our next card is called Spire of Industry. Have you ever heard of this one?
This was the one that I put on here. I think this card is great.
Yeah, it's a land. It taps for colorless mana, or you can pay a life to add a mana of any color if you control an artifact.
There's not much to say about this one, but I think it's closer to Mana Confluence and City of Brass than we think. Those cards are obviously still better, but the fact that this one does have an upside of you can just tap it for colorless mana and lose no life if you need to, I think is actually weirdly relevant. So like this can tap for the turn one Sol Ring, and then on turn two, it taps for a mana of any color, and it's the exact same thing as City of Brass, except it has an upside of, like I said, also being able to tap for colorless for no loss of life. And I think weirdly comes up where like this card can like save you like three life a game sometimes.
By not being Mana Confluence or City of Brass.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, by just tapping, because sometimes you just don't need it. It's just a colorless mana and you don't need the mana of a color because it's just tapping for a talisman or something anyway. And it can save you that life when you need to.
Yeah.
There is a downside. Obviously, there are some hands where you go, fuck, if this could just cast my Birds of Paradise, it would be much better. And then, yeah, that sucks. But like Ancient Tomb also has that same downside. The upside for Ancient Tomb is much, much higher. The upside for this one is less. But in five color decks, I think this card's like important. If you have like a lot of colors and you want to be able to cast stuff, realistically, like in Terra, I'm not keeping any hands that don't already have artifacts in them.
Yeah.
Because I need fast mana to start the game.
It's pretty much a mistake.
Yeah. Like in a lot of decks, like you're not keeping a hand if it doesn't have some piece of mana or something. So no. Spire of Industry is like fine there. So yeah, I like this card a lot. I think it's just,
I agree.
It's just another five color land that I think should see play in a lot more decks because the downside is really kind of low and the upside I think is just like being able to cast your spells.
Do you have like a minimum number of artifacts you want to play before you have this?
I think it's the Mox Opal number. I think if you're playing
the same,
I think if you're playing Mox Opal, I think this card is worthy of consideration if you're also playing four or more colors. If you're playing three colors, I don't know that you need it, but even in stuff like Rock'Sai, I've played it before and I've considered it in Rock'Sai, so in some decks I still think it can be good.
It's way easier to turn on than Mox Opal though. Yeah. Too. Yeah, so
it's just one artifact.
Mox Opal needs two other things.
Right,
you could
yeah.
just have Mox Opal
right,
and
yeah.
this thing is your Mox Opal now.
So that's kind of where I put it. If you're playing Mox Opal, you can play Spire of Industry. I think
that makes sense. Yeah, I definitely underrate this card. I don't think about this enough for decks that I put together. Not that I put together a lot of four and five color decks that often anymore, but I don't know. I think I should be keeping this one in mind a little bit more.
Yeah.
Starting Town has kind of affected my placement of this card a little bit, though. Yeah, but not every deck that I play wants to win on turn one or two or turn three. And that's where I've tended to like Starting Town.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So maybe this is like, if you don't want Starting Town, but you play some artifacts and have a bunch of colors. Yeah. Okay.
Five color lands are just fucking good. Like, you don't really realize how good it is to just be able to cast your spells. Like, even Tarnished Citadel, I love it in Sisse. Like, I'm not using my life total for anything else. And it's great. It's like a five color. Who cares? Three life. I don't give a shit. I'm casting, you know, a green, green, white spell and then a blue, blue, red spell the next turn. Whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm casting all the spells that I want to. And an underrated part of Magic is just like being able to cast the spells that you want to cast when you want to cast them.
I think we get a lot of new cards and then forget about some of the other older tools and then like stop relying on them when there are situations that they actually are going to be a little bit more advantageous like that.
Right.
So I do like that for this podcast. It's like, here's a couple things. Just don't forget that these cards exist.
Don't forget these cards
you
exist.
You have to play them. There are going to be times where there are things better than them. They are still really good in the spaces that their homes are located in.
Very, very agree.
Very agree. Dude, Zuladuck is an underrated commander.
Zuladuck is kind of underrated.
Fuck, this got second place at the last Convoke tournament. Did you see that?
Yes, that's crazy.
That's so crazy.
So fun.
I'll never sit down in a pod with Zuladuck and correctly rate it.
Not at all. I'm never, not going to know what's going on ever.
Ever. I will underrate it for the first three turns and then overrate it for the next six.
I'm going to say somebody should probably do something about this and then I'm not going to do anything about it because I don't know what to do.
I hope that a tally flips me into good shit from your deck.
That's your best plan, right?
That's my best plan is just go. I hope that I can just go faster than them and hit the, and not hit Warping Whale for some reason.
Every time I see someone play Warping Whale, this is another one they go, oh, it doesn't do that.
It doesn't do that.
It only counters sorceries.
Dude, that is my biggest indicator of a bad card is when everyone forgets what they do when they cast
it. They think it should do something reasonable and they go, nope, it doesn't do that, actually.
This doesn't work here. Yeah. Okay.
Zuladuck is great. It does feel a little Atali-ish though, right? Like
it kind of does.
It's just trying to go way over the top. It's just trying to, it's like the littlest blue deck. What are those decks called?
The semi-blue
deck. The semi-blue deck. It's like you're just trying to, what if I was to make the most casual deck possible? Could that be good at CDH?
Yeah, how many like 2011 commander cards can I put in here?
Yeah, and I feel like Itali does that really well, probably the best, but Zuladuck is, I feel like, coming for the crown.
Yeah, because Zuladuck has like different ways that allows it to ramp, and you're just like spinning through your own deck, but it also gets to play cards like from Edge of Eternities that are a 3-mana warp card that's actually a 9-mana value spell.
Oh, right.
But for 3 mana, you get to cascade for stuff 8 or less.
Yeah, that's really good. Can be really good. Can be total dog shit.
I had to call my dad so that he could pick me up.
What does Zuladuck actually say? Should we say it's a 7-mana Eldrazi, probably like an Elder Eldrazi.
I think
or
it's
something.
Only a 6-mana.
6-mana only? No,
it's six mana. Wizards hates giving things the proper numbers. It's 5 and a colorless for a 7/4. Right. So now already there's
that's on purpose.
There's a 7, 6, 5, and 4 we've talked about so far.
That's on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Legendary Eldrazi. Colorless spells you cast from your hand with mana value 7 or greater have cascade.
Cascade.
But yeah, but there's other
and
things.
That's all it does.
That's all that it and does. That's all it does. But there's like that interactive spell that's free if you control a creature with power 7 or greater. Yeah. So with him in play, you have a free colorless deflecting swat that cascades.
Yeah. These decks are really good. They take advantage of counter spells really well. They put a stop to if you're a deck that's hoping to just force a will, the one key piece of interaction, Zuladuck is gonna eat that up all day and it's gonna be great.
Especially because it's not gonna do anything until you've already had to use the force of will on someone else.
Like, right, sure.
It's going to take advantage of the fact that, it's not going to interact with the table and it needs some time to set up, but the table doesn't want to lose.
Right.
And as long as the table's not losing, you can be winning.
Zuladuck is winning. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I think this card certainly is a little bit underrated because, like you said, I feel like not enough people really know what it does, or maybe that's just me. Maybe I just don't really know what it
when
does.
When I don't
fully,
know
but...
what something does, I assume that nobody knows what it does.
Right, yeah. Like we said, like with the semi-blue strategy and with Itali getting better, I think this little niche of the metagame, this style of deck, I think is we're going to see
the
more...
The anti-meta.
Yeah, we're going to see more exploration in that category, and I think that's going to yield some good results over time.
Yeah, I think it's a cool thing to do. It's not always the best thing to do, and you have to be smart about when you do it, but it works out for a lot of players. Like you said, at Night of the Living Deck, it just got second place, and it's going to keep doing well if people keep bringing it to tournaments.
Right.
That's the only thing.
Rog'Sai was the deck that got first place at Convoke.
That is the deck that got first place. Nice. Wow, yeah, that deck's not underrated at all. Boom, there we go. Your last card.
My last card, the final one.
A card that you can't get off of your fucking mind. Emerald Charm.
Emerald Charm, yeah. Emerald Charm is good.
It's so good,
I think Emerald Charm is good.
I'm glad that green's good again.
Yeah.
podcast means is that green's underrated.
No, I think realistically, I think with the introduction of Avatar, I think green's getting a couple new tools that we've seen.
I think the badger
that doubles the green mana. I think the cabbage man. I think both of these cards are going to be playable in green decks. I think that's nice.
Emerald Charm.
Oh yeah, what does this card do? It does a lot.
It is a green mana instant
that says, I think one of the modes is like destroy target world enchantment.
But yeah.
I think that has been errated to non-aura enchantments. It also untaps permanent or a land? I think probably a land. Untaps a land?
It untaps a permanent.
Untaps a permanent. Oh, nice. Untaps the One Ring or Guy's Cradle. And then it also, like, does it maybe like something loses flying or something?
That is what it does. A target creature loses flying.
Combat
trick. You can block the Mockingbird token.
Yeah, bring it around full circle. I think cards that can both push you, like I've said this before, cards that can both push you ahead and stop your opponents are good things. So the fact that this can destroy a Underworld Breach or a Rhystic Study more likely, or I guess sometimes a Necropotence or something. And then also it could untap your Guy's Cradle or untap your One Ring or allow you to gain more. I think that's good.
The existence of this nullify the fact that I talked about Nature's Claim and that I should be on this in Itali instead of Nature's Claim?
Perhaps.
Because if I want it to be a silence to get rid of Rhystic Study, although it's not technically as universal, there's a world where it's a ramp spell in my deck, though, too.
What artifacts do you want to get rid of?
Vexing Bobble.
Never
mind. Yep, yeah. Never mind.
There are some,
I take it back.
Because this does, yeah, just enchantments, like I listed off some of the best cards in CDH, but then all of the other ones this doesn't hit. It doesn't hit any artifact mana. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but it doesn't hit a Vexing Bobble. It doesn't hit a Defense Grid. It doesn't hit Witchclaw Talisman, yada, yada, yada.
I think this is primarily still just like better for the Gaia's Cradle decks. They just want like a cheap way to have their own Dark Ritual in a color combination that doesn't have one.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the Gaia's Cradle decks, in Rogthras, in Yoshithras, in all of those decks, I think this card is like stellar. It's A+. Don't just slip it in your deck. You know what I mean? Don't just put it in your deck. But if your main strategy is tapping and untapping a thing, which there are a fair amount of strategies that rely on the One Ring or Gaia's Cradle.
Honestly, yeah, like hitting the One Ring too, not even just Gaia's Cradle. This could also be Ancestral Recall on top of it.
That's pretty nice upside. So I think it's a little bit underrated because I think it should say a little bit more play in those decks, but it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't go in every deck. Just, you have to be able to do both modes. Gotta go both ways.
Ooh, maybe if you're playing Legolas's Quick Reflexes and you have like a way that you're tapping the same creature, you can like do more fights.
I have not thought about it for real in Sisse, but Sisse doesn't really care to get rid of Rhystic Studies a ton.
Because you don't cast spells.
Ideally by that time, I'm not casting spells, I guess.
Yeah, you need to do both because you don't care about having things lose flying either. You don't need to do that.
It hasn't come up for me yet.
Not yet.
So yeah, I think it's specifically you want to get rid of Rhystic Studies because you're planning on casting a bunch of spells. So decks like the Rogthras decks that play Song of Creation, they could certainly want that effect and then also want the untapping thing. And also, Sisse's in 5 colors and the slots are so tight and you're so many legend focused, yada, yada. But I still think this card is underrated and I think it should go in more decks because I think it's cool.
I think so too. I have one more.
Our 10th card. What is it?
Our 10th card is a card that I just really haven't had the chance to talk about on the channel and I wanted to. So that's why we're talking about it. This is Sammy Wildcat Captain. Do you remember this one?
Sammy Wildcat Captain.
What do you think this card does?
I'm going to say this is from Wildcats, High School Musical. Is this a High School Musical secretly that I missed?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it's just the flavor text says, I don't dance. I know you can.
We laugh. That's coming one day.
That's coming one of these days. I can't wait.
They've worked with Disney already, right? Because Spider-Man is Disney.
And Marvel is Disney.
So there's not out of pocket to think that. Is that the right expression to use there? I don't know. It's not crazy to think that.
Dude, I can't wait for the iCarly secret lair.
Oh, no.
This is going to be great.
Drake and Josh secret lair.
All right. So Sammy Wildcat Captain does not do what you thought it did.
It does not dribble a basketball and sing.
Sammy Wildcat Captain is 4 red and a white for a 4/4. Are you listening?
Is it Affinity?
Dude, yeah.
Sorry, it is.
Now you're stealing my thunder.
I'm sorry. Okay, I know this card.
All right. Sammy Wildcat Captain. Nah, I don't want
to
read it anymore.
Let me read it. Sammy Wildcat Captain is for 4 a red and a white, a legendary creature, human artificer.
Oh, I know the card you're talking about.
That doesn't feel good.
You see how it feels?
That doesn't feel good. It's also got double strike and vigilance for some reason, which vigilance is an underrated keyword.
That's also very true.
Vigilance is really good, especially casual more than CDH, but even in CDH, realistically, I think Vigilance is actually good.
One of the better combat keywords.
Spells you cast have affinity for artifacts, which is they cost one less to cast for each artifact you control. Affinity is so good. You don't even have to tap the artifact. It's just like they cost that much less.
They just cost that much less. Yeah, and so many artifacts only cost colorless, generic mana.
So it just makes them free so quickly.
Yeah.
This is a 4-4 also is what Sammy is.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card might be a little bit underrated.
We'll put this card on my radar is that it gets to cast like the Skyship Weatherlight, I think is what it is.
Search your library for like any number of artifacts or something.
Yeah, and like, yeah, it falls to Opposition Agent, which is a shame, but yeah. Like you for free, basically, that lets you draw every single card in your deck and then win the game.
And then you just cast them for free there. Probably because it's free already.
Yeah, like it's cool that this deck actually has like one card win conditions.
Yeah.
And like there's ramp. Like we know that there's ramp because Atali's in red and Atali plays a ton of red ramp. And there's a lot of artifact ramp up there that really helps what this thing does. There's a lot of just super free things that you can do. Like you get to play Mystic Forge and Sensei's Top combos,
sure.
Which is really nice.
I'm going to be honest with you. What I'm hearing is the best bracket four deck I've ever heard in my life. I do understand with what you're saying that like it could be a CDH deck. Like I do get what you're saying because it effectively, once you get to a certain point, it like makes all of your spells free. Reads like you're making them all cost a little bit less. But what it actually plays is like by the time you get this thing out, you have to ramp a bunch. You had to play a lot of artifacts. So it reads like all your artifacts are free, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like if you can start to draw a couple of cards after that, then like you get to keep snowballing and making sure that your next like five mana spell is free. And then eventually your Portal to Phyrexia is free. And you just get to like come out on top with things like that.
My gut always says like, oh, a Boros Commander without any card advantage in it. Like that's going to be tough. But like times are different. We talked about Professional Facebreaker already being card advantage sometimes. Esper Sentinel is here. There are so many ways in like, red and white to draw cards.
In this deck too.
So good. Like, it's insane. Like even like Archivist of Ogma, and there's like a ton of white little creatures and some artifact spells too that like help you draw cards. So like this card, it might not be as starving for card advantage as I think that it would be, but
it still does the whole mana thing, which is like one of the five things that we're looking for in the command zone. I mean, technically it does the beat stick thing too. A 4-4 double strike vigilance. Like you are going to kill players if you need to with that thing.
And like there are probably like, I don't know if is it worth it to slip in an artifact that makes your guy huge so you can like one shot commander damage? Probably not, right? But like,
but it's still probably pretty easy to do that though. This deck just is crazy. Like if you underrate it, you will lose to this deck because you will see that it's six mana. You will be surprised at how quickly the commander comes out and it's turned on right away, right? It's not one of these commanders that has to then later tap to do its thing. Like once it hits, everything has affinity and the next spell that they cast is going to be free.
I like that it's a Boros deck like Winota, but completely opposite from
so
Winota.
So different.
It's like literally a storm deck through and through. You're casting 100 spells. So if you want to play red and white and you want to do storm stuff, this is certainly the deck, right?
I think so too. Yeah.
And there's nothing else in CDH that comes close.
No, it's very unique. And I think that a big thing about it is that there's not enough people tinkering around with it right now.
There's
like,
some. But
there's some. Yeah. It hasn't seen a lot of tournament play yet. If you go to do a lot of research on it, you'll see a lot of lists that are doing a lot of different things. It needs time. It needs a community. But I think if it gets that, I'm not saying it's going to be like the new tier one deck to look out for, but I think that it could
play a role.
I want to see this more in casual CEDH pods and we need a community for it. And I don't want to be that guy, but if people are out there, I just need to tell people that this guy exists.
Yeah.
Maybe this will help this guy a little bit.
I agree with you. I think the cards could be something. I do think it's a little underrated. Every time I see a play, I go, oh, it's a lot better than I think it is. It's actually kind of cracked.
For sure.
Yeah.
So let's rate the cards that we talked about today.
Let's
give them the play to win scale, which we all know, but we're going to go over real quick anyway. It's a 1-5 scale.
1-5 scale. A 5 is, this is a CDH staple, goes in every single deck, no matter what. Every single deck. This is Sol Ring, Chrome Mox, Mox Diamond. That's like probably the only true 5s. 5 out of 5 is a perfect score, right?
I would say that if, like, Force of Will is also a 5 out of 5.
Because it goes in every blue deck. And
if it's defined to your color too, like Demonic Tutor is a 5. Like, if it's defined to your color there's no reason that your color is not playing this card, then I would say that's a 5.
4s go in a good chunk of decks. This is a playable card in just CDH decks in general. It's not really tied to a specific commander. It's just like they're good cards in CDH.
There's a lot of reasons you could cut this card because it's either not synergistic with your commander or there's like actually something better that works because of your commander. But for the most part, without synergy being considered, or like they're super synergistic with so many commanders that it works out super good. So there's a couple different avenues they can go down.
A 3 is like a card that it's good in one deck, or it's okay in a couple decks is normally where we land on. If it's really, really good in one deck, it's a max Magda card. Magda cards are really rarely getting more than like a 3 point something or something because they're really just good in Magda. So it's like hard to rate them outside of that.
Or like a Thrasios card where it could go in a couple of different Thrasios decks, but if you're not playing one of these Thrasios decks, you don't care.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the couple of decks I switch in. And then a two is like, these are close to like not good. Maybe in like one specific deck that can be okay. It's playable, I guess. Overall, twos are just like
replaceable.
Replaceable. They're the first cuts normally. They're the 98th, 7th, 99th card that you're getting rid of. And then one is like a bad card. We think it's bad. People play it and we probably don't agree with it, but we think it's bad.
We are rating them correctly and we think they're overrated.
But, and then zeros are not CDH cards. So
none of the cards on this list are going to be zeros. Today.
Wrath of God is a zero.
There we go.
Great card, but for CDH, it's a zero because there's no reason to play it.
So what would we give Mockingbird as a rating?
Mockingbird, I think, goes in several good decks. So it's somewhere in the four ranges for me. I think I'm going to give Mockingbird a 4.2.
That feels 4.2? Right. Yeah, I think that I have to agree with that. As one of the better clones, a lot of times the best clone for your deck, I think that's something that most blue decks want, but not all blue decks do. So yeah, I would say a 4 for me, probably.
Okay, which would average out to a 4.1.
A 4.1 we got for that.
Remember that. Write that down.
4.1. Then Nature's Claim was next. Nature's Claim's worse. I'm going to give Nature's Claim a 2. Because it is very replaceable, but it's really good in my one strategy, but it's also a little replaceable in the strategy that I've been thinking about it for.
I think I agree that it's a 2 because like we just said, 2s are like the 98th, 99th card a lot of the time.
And I'm ready to cut Nature's Claim when I need to.
Yeah, but I do stand by that it's solid and people should not forget about it and play it when you can because it can be quite good. But I agree. I think 2 sounds accurate.
Now, Snap. I think it's like a 4.5.
4.5.
Snap is so good. Yeah. I think Snap is like a truly underrated card that way more decks need to be playing.
Yeah, I think I might agree with you. I think 4.5 might be, well...
You think it's going higher?
No. If anything, a little bit lower. Because I do think it goes in a lot of decks, but it doesn't just go in Thrasios decks. It can also go in any deck that just wants a free spell.
Yeah, I mean, at this point now, like, I wish it could go in Italia, but like, put it in Rog'Sai too, like if you want. Because there are times where it can ramp you.
Untapping Ancient Tomb, I don't care about 4 life. I would love some more mana. That's great.
No, yeah. Especially like if you're on Crystal Vein then too. Like the more of these soul lands that you play, the more you want.
Crystal Vein a little bit less because you have to sacrifice it for the 2 mana.
But
a little bit because you can still like just tap it for the 1 mana, untap it, and then sack it for 2 mana.
Which is still really good. Ramps you
I'm gonna agree with you on this one. I think 4.5 sounds right. I think this card's incredible.
Now, Grim Tutor's the next card.
A little bit worse maybe. Still good.
I think Grim Tutor's a 3. Considering it's 3 mana and the 3 life. Oh, and
3 sounds fun. I can't agree with you too much. I've agreed with you too much already. So I'm going to say a 3.5 because I think this card is still quite good. It works really good with the best card in the format, which is Underworld Breach. So I'm going to say a 3.5.
Nice. A 3.25 that comes out to then. Professional Facebreaker.
Better or worse than Grim Tutor? Maybe a little better. Is that true?
I think that Grim Tutor's a little bit better, but like I also have Professional Facebreaker underrated a little bit right now because of my Atali brain.
Yeah.
But a Timna brain, see, I don't even know. It's quite good, but like I would like it more in a Mardu Timna deck than I would in a Blue Farm deck.
I still think it's really good in Blue Farm. There's a lot of good 3-drops in Blue
There's
Farm,
a lot though. Of good 3-drops in Blue Farm, and Delny is not in a lot of those lists. A lot of the synergy aspects end up being lessened with that, and you just get better things that outclass this card.
3.4 for me.
A 3.4?
That feels right.
I have to say it's lower than a 3 because I gave Grim Tutor a 3. So I'm going to say a
2.9. Average with a 3.4 is what? Like 3.2-ish or something?
I guess.
Right, 3.2-ish.
That's a perfect example of underrating. Dargo Timna next.
Them both together, the pairing.
As a commander pair.
Yeah, I don't think these decks are quite a tier 1 strategy yet, but I do think there's a world where they could become a tier 1 strategy, truly.
So they're tier 2, so it's a 2?
So, no, because tier 2 is like, I think like a 3. Underrated though. I'm going to say, actually, I think 3.8. I'm going to give them a 3.8 because I think they are underrated. So yeah, 3.8.
I was going to give it a 3.5 because I think I'm still underrating it a little bit. Dargo's broken, but Dargo just requires that you use your brain power quite a bit. Some casual games of CEDH, you're going to go, I don't want to play Dargo. I don't want to have to think that kind of much. So I'm going to make that knock it, but that's not a power reason.
So what's the average on that one?
It's my list. I can do whatever I want. It's a 3.65.
3.65, sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then Spire of Industry. This one should probably be a 4. I'm going to give it a 4.
4 feels nice and average. It's simple. It's what it does. It's a 4.
Everything that it does is good and it's never off.
Right. Yeah. It's never going to go, oh my God, thank God. Well, sometimes it will actually go, oh, I can cast my spells. That's really good.
It'll help you cast your Eldrazi Confluence too,
that's
which is
true.
Underrated.
Weirdly really relevant. Okay.
Zooladuck, speaking of Eldrazi Confluence.
Speaking of, I don't know, man. What feels right for this one? It's like
this is like a 3 with an asterisk next to it.
I think it's worse than Grim Tutor, and I gave Grim Tutor a 3.5. I'll give it a 3.2.
A 3.2?
A 3.22.
All right, so that's going to be a 3.12.
I give it a 3.22, actually, though. So,
a 3.11.
Yeah, 3.11.
Okay, but with an asterisk next to it.
And what's the asterisk?
The asterisk is that, like, right now, yes, but this is something that, like, if you watch this podcast in a year from now.
Well, remember when they were at it so low, and now Zooladuck is, like, one of the best decks in CEDH.
Or it could be, like, people were trying out Zooladuck in CEDH at one point.
You could go both ways right
what
now.
What the hell? Yeah. And then your Emerald Charm.
Emerald Charm.
What do you want to give Emerald Charm?
Somewhere in the 3s still.
I would agree.
It really only goes in the Gaia's Cradle decks and the One Ring decks that are green, but it goes in a couple of decks, so it's not just one deck. It's not just a 3.
But it's like one style of deck.
Yeah. It's about as good as Grim Tutor, I think. I'm going to say a little bit,
I'm going to give it a 3, because I think it's about as good as Grim Tutor.
Well, no, I'll give it a 3.4, because I think it's worse and I like Grim Tutor more. 3.4 for me.
The 3.2. And then Sammy Wildcat Captain.
Yeah, what's
I'm
going to
give it 2.
Yeah.
Because that one I knew wasn't going to be
with another
like,
asterisk, maybe.
Underrated. Yeah. Like,
I'm going to give it a 2.
I'm rating that.
I'm going to give it a 2.4, because I think it could be something, and I'm gonna put an asterisk on this one, that in a year from now, this could be way better or way worse than we think.
Wow. I can't believe people were playing or trying this or that commander
exactly.
In CEDH.
What's our list? Is that it? That was 10?
That was it. That was 10.
What are the top 10 most underrated cards in CEDH? Cam, go.
So the worst one is Nature's Claim,
yep.
Followed by Sammy Wildcat Captain,
yep.
Followed by Zooladuck,
yep.
And then we have a tie between Professional Facebreaker and Emerald Charm,
yep.
And then Grim Tutor's next,
okay.
Followed by Dargo Timna. Yeah. Our second place winner is Spire of Industry. And then the number one most underrated card in CEDH is Mockingbird.
Mockingbird. Did you say snap? Did I just...
And then our number one... most underrated card in CEDH is Snap.
Snap. So Mockingbird, then Snap.
So yeah, so the top 3 was Spire of Industry, Mockingbird, Snap.
Is Snap that underrated? Does everyone love Snap and it's actually just the best card and everyone knows it?
Let us know in the comments.
Let us know
down
if we
below.
Got that one wrong, because I feel like we could have gotten that one wrong. I feel like I don't see it like all the time.
Honestly, if people love it, we're not seeing it enough for the love that people will have for it. So
I stand by this list. I think it's a great list.
I think it's a great list too. So what cards do you underrate or that you think are underrated?
Thank you so much for watching. If you like sports directly, you do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
And then tell me what in the comments you think are the most
And then tell me in the comments what you think is the most underrated.
In the comments. Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Oki Toad, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Eye, David Newman, Johnny Denver Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fires, Frogman, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larson, Eroys, Yorba Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, Essie Phillip, Holding Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Legs, Banjo, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Gabriel Garrett, Mace the Ace, Alex Smith, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butt, Snoosh, Quaja Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off.
You can follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
I'm not Nathan. Mike H, Mick Saucy, Max McComber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Safarius, Ash Wayne, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Justin Yon, Wild Fang, Thomas Breno, and David Nelson.